to tell a tale tonight within a room of potted wall and white. I speak to my delight of you alive again.
I'm Kat.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Injustice for All,
where we focus on true crime, justice for children, the political system, and so much more.
In this podcast, we discuss sensitive subject matters. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to another episode of Injustice for All, the Kat and Dee Show. However, this week, we are absent the D.
We ain't got no D.
We ain't got no D.
No D.
We have a Michaela visiting us again, as she was with us when we were doing the Gypsy Rose case. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Thank you.
So, well, things didn't quite pan out the way we expected because, for whatever reason, jurors really came back with a verdict for the case that we wanted to do this week a lot quicker than I expected them to.
So, like 20 minutes ago.
Right. So we were planning on doing the Alex Murdaugh story slash case. And in my mind, the way this was going to go is that we were going to post the first part before the jurors came back with a verdict, and then post the second part after they came back with a verdict.
It happened.
I mean, literally, the defense just finished their closing arguments, and like, I think one of the jurors must have just gone to the bathroom real quick. They came back with a verdict, and here we are. I just don't even get it.
I think that was like the calling. It's probably time to get in here.
Just didn't expect it. But we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. So this is going to be about Alex Murdaugh and family, basically, which spans over many. Actually, technically, it spans over a century.
Huh?
Yeah, because it starts with Alex Murdaugh's grandfather, Rudolph Murdaugh.
Dude, he was corrupt, too.
It's not so much, a lot of people thought that the whole family was to a certain extent. I think that.
How long is a century?
100 years.
So I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Like a century, like a long time.
A century. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Alex Murdaugh's grandfather, Rudolph Murdaugh, I mean, the only thing that he was really accused of is during Prohibition, I think it was, he was accused of telling, like, these people who were selling alcohol, like, where to go to get away from being caught. And then he was actually acquitted. He wasn't actually found guilty. That was really, like, the biggest thing that happened under his...
But I mean, like, Prohibition, that's like history books. Like, we're going back in history books.
Yes.
Of, like, how scandalous they are.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that you also have to take into consideration, because you're talking about a century of a family having a lot of power. So Rudolph Murdaugh, it's like it rhymes. It kind of does not roll off the tongue the way you think it would. But anyway, Rudolph Murdaugh, he was the first of the Murdaughs to be a solicitor.
What does that mean?
So in South Carolina, which is where they are from, they call prosecutors solicitors. I have no idea why.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't, in my brain, when I think about a prosecutor, solicitor isn't something that I would associate
That's
with a
goofy.
Prosecutor. Yeah, it doesn't match.
No.
So he was the first of the family to be a solicitor. The other thing that he did was he opened the family law firm. So Not only was he a solicitor and a prosecutor, but he also had a private practice. So obviously they have been in law for a very long time. The other thing is the way that South Carolina is broken up. He was the solicitor of the 14th district. And the 14th district has 5 counties in it. So he was actually quite powerful. They actually used to call it Murdaugh County.
Oh, God.
Even though it was 5 different counties, they called it Murdaugh County.
The entire thing?
All of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So they were viewed as having a lot of power because obviously they knew a lot of judges, sheriffs, coroner, you name it. Anybody within the law field, if you will, that family was very connected. So because of that, I think that they kind of carried that, I don't know, I guess people just assume that there's corruption automatically involved whenever you have somebody who has that kind of power. I don't know.
Kind of, though. I feel like the events that took place just prove that there was, and there's influence from them in, like, all parts of the government.
Well, I mean, I think that naturally, you know, when there's power involved, I think that it breeds corruption.
Yeah.
I mean, it just naturally. I don't think disagree.
That's probably why people assume that, because that's just how it is.
But it doesn't I don't think it necessarily means that somebody's a murderer.
No,
either.
I'm not saying like that, but I'm saying I think there's some pretty crucial events of cover-up and persuasion that could lead people to believe that he could do something like this.
Right. And I think that because of that, I don't know that he would ever get a fair trial, at least not anywhere near five counties.
Regardless, it would be unfair, but
I mean, I don't even know if he'd get a fair trial in South Carolina, to be honest, because I think that he would probably be viewed as 100% corrupt, 100%, you know, guilty no matter what. Even if somebody didn't believe that he was a murderer, I think that because they believe he belongs in jail, they don't care.
Which is interesting, because if, you know, he's from South Carolina and he has connections all over the place, it's interesting that, like, everybody from there would be against him.
Well, the difference is that you have the people that are within the system, and you have the people that are out of the system. Oh, yes, as you like to call them, the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth.
Exactly, the Commonwealth. Well, in this case, it was up to the Commonwealth.
Which, of course,
is always, like, they don't like him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think in Alex Murdaugh's case,
which, by the way, he has like 5 different names. I don't know.
I know. Okay.
I feel like we have to talk about that.
Okay. So the person who was on trial recently, his actual name is Richard Alexander Murdaugh. He went by Alec.
I've heard there's variations of even that.
Right. But it's spelled Alex with an X.
But I've heard people say Alec too.
I've heard Alec.
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 And Alex.
And Alex. Exactly. I feel like we're echoing each other.
Yeah.
But yes.
And it's the exact same with Murdaugh too. I hear Murdaugh, Murdaugh.
Murdaugh.
Murdaugh. It's like, I don't know which one's right.
What's interesting is that I've actually heard Alex pronounce it different ways.
I've heard him say, I think, Murdaugh.
I've heard Murdaugh.
Murdaugh.
Murdaugh. Murdaugh.
I didn't hear him say it much, but I think the one time I heard him, it was like Murdaugh.
And also the brother said it very, like, less drawly.
Oh my God. This whole family don't even know their name.
I know. Like, well, because, you know, they have that thick southern drawl. They're like thick South Carolina drawl.
I figured they'd go with like the most bougie version, which is like Murdaugh, where it's like silent.
I don't know. It sounds
Murdaugh.
When they say it, it sounds podunk.
Murdaugh.
Murdaugh. Okay. Well, anyway,
just
but the got brother that covered. When the brother said it, he said Murdaugh. Like it.
Yeah,
was
that's what I thought it was.
Very, but he pronounced like all the letters
Murdaugh.
Murdaugh.
I don't know, but
anyway,
it's confusing, and I feel like we just had to.
Yeah,
clear that up.
All the same person.
I'm going to say Alex Murdaugh. No, now I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm going to say Alex Murdaugh.
Murdaugh. Yeah.
Okay.
The G and the H are, that much I know. The G and the H seem to be predominantly silent. Only a few people pronounced it as a K.
Alex did. He said Murdaugh. I swear to God he did. Anyway.
Anyway, okay. Nobody knows the name.
It's confusing.
We're going with Alex Murdaugh. Mm-hmm. The main reason, okay, I'm just going to side note. So his best friend, I believe, for decades and decades and decades and decades, is Richard.
The same name.
The same name, which is why I believe he probably has gone by Alex for so long.
Oh, because they're like both associated together?
They're both attorneys, and they've been best friends for decades. He also is the one that was defending him.
Right, I remember that.
He was one of the defense counsel. And a lot of people just called him Dick, I think, because they felt that it was
South
appropriate.
Dude, South Carolina in the names. I
know.
Do it.
Everybody's it's also goofy. Bo.
Huh?
Everybody is Bo.
Oh, yeah. I thought, because we watched the Netflix thing together.
Right.
And I thought it was like bad subtitles that said Bo instead of bro.
Yeah. No.
Bo.
They call when you're good friends with somebody. I feel like we need to get some of this straight so that, you know.
It's not confusing later.
If you guys ever watch anything that has to do with this case, you'll understand.
Yeah.
So Bo is something that you call somebody that you're good friends with.
Sean Bo.
Yeah. Because I, unlike Michaela, I watched the trial.
I can't watch it.
That's okay.
I like the Netflix. That's the thing is I like the Netflix, like when they go through the story of what happened. As soon as they get in the courtroom, I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't listen
to
it.
That's where I
that's where she comes in, and she will literally sit there for 4 hours.
It was 8 hours a day.
Oh my God. I can't do it.
And it was supposed to be a 3-week trial, and it turned out to be 6.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I like the series and the drama, and then when it's all like, it's so boring. It's so boring. I
see,
can't do it.
That's where I think all the action is.
Of course. <too. laughs> I can't do it.
It got crazy. Okay, we'll talk about that later. Anyway.
In the courtroom.
It's
crazy
did.
Time in the courtroom.
It got crazy up in there. But anyway, we'll discuss that later. So, all right. So anyway, they have very odd names for it. Like I think Grandma was like, I don't know, something. Grandpa was like, Papa T, or I don't know.
Peepaw.
Yeah, they had like all kinds of weird names up in there. It was all weird and wonky. Anyway, getting way off track. So back to
the power of them.
Rudolph Murdaugh. So he was the first to be the solicitor and open the law firm. Now the law firm stayed in practice for a century.
Right. Is it, has it been?
We'll get to that.
Right. I remember now.
And then his son, which is Alex Murdaugh's father, then took over as solicitor.
Right.
And was solicitor until, I believe it was 2000, I want to say 6. I could be wrong.
Is he still alive? Because I know.
No.
When did he die?
We'll talk about that.
Oh, okay.
That it's all there's
because they didn't cover anything about that. I don't think did they.
I don't think so. I think they cut things off right when.
I think it was a little biased.
Oh, you think?
A little bit, just a little bit.
It was highly biased. If you've seen the Netflix documentary on Alex Murdaugh, it was extremely biased.
Yeah.
That was definitely either media driven or resident driven.
Yeah.
Because that was very biased. I think it had good information.
It like educated, because I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, Michaela came in cold.
Yeah, basically. So I mostly paid attention to just the events that took place, not so much the opinions and how people felt about him.
Yeah. Because it wasn't nice.
Because it was pretty biased.
So when Alex Murdaugh got his, obviously his degree and his his law degree. Then he went into practice, and he became what he called, or they called, a volunteer solicitor. And basically that was just, he wanted to work with his dad. So he wasn't ever really, maybe I've been listening to the trial too long. What? My English getting got, yeah, my English got a little funky there. He wasn't really ever an actual solicitor, but they gave him, so this is another weird thing. Now, I'm pretty sure, I listen to a lot of prosecutors or former prosecutors that talk. I'm pretty sure in Los Angeles, at least, prosecutors don't get badges, like police badges.
Oh, really?
Right.
Like shown as an official?
Mm-hmm. However, in South Carolina, they do.
I feel like that's just all part of the South and like
right.
power.
It's like, it's kind of like an honorary badge, I think, but it's a badge nonetheless.
What would they use it for?
So, for instance, and you can kind of, I hate to use like TV shows as like an example because it's not really like TV shows, but you know, when there's, for instance, a crime scene.
Yeah.
And you know,
oh, when they need to get in.
When they need to get in to see what happens so that they can, you know, start the process of tracking evidence and stuff like that.
Do they really need a badge to do that, though?
Well, sometimes in order to cross a crime scene, you do. Because you can't get through. I mean, theoretically, you would think that people would know who you are.
I'd hope so.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, there might be somebody new. There may be, you know, whatever the case may be. And just for, you know, sake of simplicity,
mm-hmm.
you would have a badge so that you could just, if you're in a hurry, you could just go through, flash your badge.
I guess it makes sense.
Okay. So because Alex was a volunteer solicitor, he was still considered a solicitor and had a badge.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that even though he was only a solicitor until 2014, when I want to say, see, I feel like his dad may have been a solicitor until 2014, not 2006, because it was 2014 that he was no longer a solicitor. But anyway, so once he stopped being a solicitor, it's not like they sit there and say, okay, can we have our badge back?
Mm-hmm. They don't care. Just keep it.
They just keep it.
That's literally what happened to me with Hot Topic. Sorry. Sorry, not to go off track, but like when I ended my job, I was like, do I give this back? And they're like, no, I don't care. I don't want it.
I'm going to walk around with this badge.
That was so off topic, but I'll be relating.
I get you. Thanks. I get you. The only difference is that having like a Hot Topic badge and like an official like police type badge.
I'm just saying I relate.
Well, I'm just saying the difference between the two, one not so dangerous, one could be kind of dangerous.
Right. Mine's the I don't mean
dangerous like
no, you know, but he can use
but like, he can use it for situations not appropriately.
He could have definitely abused the power of that.
Exactly. So the other thing that, you know, rubbed people a bit off was the fact that Alex took the vehicle that he used that was under the family law firm's umbrella. You know how there's business cars and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So he had lights put in.
Oh, like?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like police lights.
Isn't that only for emergency vehicles?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So
got it.
He did certain things that, while isn't necessarily considered illegal, isn't actually something that...
I feel like it is illegal.
It's not what solicitors usually do.
But I feel like... I don't know the South Carolina laws.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure only emergency vehicles.
So, well, he had the badge, so I guess they went...
Is this kind of like the start of his abuse of power?
Right. So, kind of.
Okay.
So, Alex Murdaugh's dad, from what I've read, didn't really have anything all that exciting as far as illegal or untoward or anything like that. I felt like I needed to use untoward because, you know, we're in the South right now. Mm-hmm. In his record. But, you know, there are instances where Alex Murdaugh has, just a side note, he has two boys. Sorry. That was insensitive.
It's okay. No, but it's facts.
I mean, so Paul and Buster. Buster?
Yeah. Yeah. He's Buster.
That just sounds so wrong.
I know, but he's a junior, isn't he?
He is. He's named after his father, Richard. So his name is Richard, quote, Buster Alexander Murdaugh. So the Buster comes from his grandfather. Now, I'm bringing that up only because we took that little side trail. Because whenever something comes up with the boys, it started off with one of them, usually Paul. For the most part, Buster was kind of, you know, he was the good kid.
Except there was like the one incident, what I think it depends on what your views are.
But... Right. We'll touch on that. But generally speaking, Paul tended to be the one that got himself into, you know, more constant trouble.
Yeah. And they said that.
Too. Yeah. And whenever that would happen, because his grandfather at the time was the solicitor and then, you know, retired solicitor, but still knew everybody, he would immediately call his grandfather, whether it was, you know, drinking in public or car accidents.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And like, even though like what's his name? Randolph?
The grandfather?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't have too many scandals, like back in his day, it still makes you wonder, like, what if like Alex had some stuff when he was younger that he's covered up?
Well, the one thing about Buster Randolph, Murdaugh or Murdaugh Buster.
Just don't say Buster.
Yeah.
Just say
Randolph. It's like, yeah. Okay. So Randolph, the grandfather, one thing that he was known for is getting the conviction no matter what. He was very theatrical and, I guess he didn't care if the conviction was overturned in appeals. That didn't matter to him. All he cared about was getting the conviction, and he tried to always go for the death penalty. That was his gig.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That was his gig. He was known for being a hard ass.
Wow. Okay.
And it was kind of his thing. So, you know, depending on what line you fell on the law, whether you were on the good side or the bad side, really dependent on whether or not you liked him. So if he was somebody, or if you were somebody that he liked and respected, then he would always be there to help you out if you were in a pinch.
Of course.
If you were not somebody he liked and respected, you better watch your back.
So he would like go out of like,
I don't know if he would. They never really talked about him going out of his way because, again, he never really did. It was that one instance that he was indicted for letting some bootleggers know when the raid was coming and stuff like that so that they can, you know, pack their stuff up and go somewhere else. That was the one thing that Randolph did in his tenure, if you will, as the solicitor. Now, also keep in mind that, you know, we're talking about the whole legacy thing. So because his father, Randolph's father, was also the solicitor, you know, I don't know that anybody really wanted to butt heads with him either. You know what I'm saying? So it was even probably crazy that somebody went after him for the whole bootlegger thing.
Imagine how many other, that's what I'm saying, like imagine how much didn't get, you know, brought to the surface.
Exactly. So now we talked about there being basically a century of the Murdaughs being there, and that's because the grandfather of Alex started his law firm in 1910.
Jesus.
That was his one-man show, just that law firm, you know. Then he became the solicitor in 1920. Then his son, which is Alex's dad, took over in 1940 after his dad was hit by a train in 1940. And then Alex became a volunteer solicitor. What's even crazier about the fact that all of them were solicitors is that it's not just something that you interview for. You're actually elected as a solicitor.
And they all just happened to be.
And they were all elected. That's what kind of gets me about everybody being all pissy about the fact that, you know, for, I think it ended up being like 85 years or something that a Murdaugh was a solicitor. Well, you guys are the ones that elected him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not like, but they then just fell,
did they have, you know, a hand in that?
Well, I think that there was a couple of times that that somebody ran against them, and then other times they ran uncontested, which means ran against them. But still,
yeah,
I mean, there were opportunities where somebody did run against them,
maybe, and they still
won.
But then I wonder if it's like just so corrupt that like they may have just had a hand in it, or people did it so that they weren't, you know, on
the bad side.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Like I mentioned earlier, Alex's grandfather was hit by a train and killed in 1940. So a lot of people have said that that's kind of where they kind of veered that law firm into personal injury. Now, remember, while each of them were solicitors, they still had their private practice. So they were kind of benefiting from all aspects of law, not just as prosecutors, but also as private attorneys.
Okay.
So, like I said, they kind of had their hand in all kinds of cookie jars.
So it was everything.
It was everything.
Got it.
So that, again, is why people viewed them as extremely powerful.
Right.
So there's that. Now, we are dealing with the youngest of the Murdaugh legacy, if you will.
Yeah.
Because Alex is the last one that was any type of solicitor, even if he was a volunteer solicitor. And he, based on his own testimony, he actually only prosecuted like 5 cases, and it was just because he wanted to do it with his dad.
So he wasn't even like a real lawyer?
No, he's a lawyer.
Oh.
Lawyer, 100%.
But it's like I'm hearing like volunteer and stuff. I thought that
volunteer solicitor just meant like, it's kind of like, hey, you know, I'll totally, it's like, help the prosecutors.
So solicitor is like the Mac Daddy lawyer.
Right. So the solicitor is the DA. So,
see, I get confused because you say DA, I know that. But.
Yeah. It's just, for whatever reason, in South Carolina, they call DAs solicitors. It's a Southern thing.
It's so confusing.
I know. Because as far as I know, in North Carolina, they're DAs.
It's just the South Carolina. They're so... They need to be quirky.
It's a South Carolina thing.
Yeah.
No offense to anybody in South Carolina.
No.
It's totally a cool thing and everything.
You're just goofy.
You do you.
It's okay.
So whenever I say solicitor, that just means DA.
Right. So, okay. I'm glad we got that covered because I didn't even realize.
Yeah. So, and that's why I'm saying it's an elected position. People elect these people to be their DA and go after all the criminals and stuff, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say they're on both sides of the law, it's because they both try cases, you know, or bring cases to court for personal injury and stuff like that. And they also do cases like criminal cases where they take criminals and charge them with crazy crimes and put
apparently
them in
death.
Jail and put them on death row. Yeah.
That's great.
Totally cool.
Welcome to the South.
Exactly. And apparently don't really care whether or not they're really guilty, I guess. Whatever.
Right.
I guess that's just how they roll. So, and later when we get, you know, to the nitty gritty, since we've already gone through the trial and sentencing, or I should say trial, verdict, and sentencing, it'll make sense why when I go over what the judge said, he says what he says. It'll kind of make sense because of the whole they put them on death row no matter what kind of thing. Anyway, so we're going to back it up a little bit. Back it up, move it forward, however you look at it. So Alex Murdaugh, for all intents and purposes, is an extremely talented attorney. Most people who have described him have said that he is, you know, he can be very emotional. He can be very theatrical.
Even in his cases?
Even in his, yeah, like when he's trying a case, he does extremely well. Mm-hmm. I mean, right up until even most recently, most people are very happy with the work that he does. Most people who have worked with him over the years have said nothing but good things about him as an attorney. I mean, I think some people have said, you know, is he great on all the laws? You know, does he remember all the laws? Is he great on all his, you know, precedents and stuff like that? Not all the time. But boy, when he tries a case, he can really grab a jury. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very much like his grandfather and his father, where, you know, he brings the theatrics into it. So he has won many cases. He's brought in a lot of money for the law firm that he worked with. Well, it's his grandfather's and his father's law firm that is kind of, you know, it ballooned. There's partners and, you know, more attorneys within it, but it's still based on the original law firm that his grandfather opened in 1910. So
right.
It's been around for over a century. All that comes to a head on February 23rd, 2019, where we have a group of kids, I say kids, they're adults, including Paul Murdaugh, which is the youngest of Alex Murdaugh's kids.
They all had kind of like a circle of friends that they had been with. I'm not sure exactly how it started, but I know Mallory and her boyfriend, Anthony, had been friends since like preschool or something.
Right.
And then she was best friends with Miley, who she knew, I'm pretty sure, sometime in elementary school.
I think there was even a video of, I want to say it was Mallory, yeah, talking about how her best friend was Miley.
And she was so young.
Super young.
Really young.
Like 4 or 5.
And then Miley was dating Anthony's cousin, Connor. It's his first cousin.
Right.
And then I guess later on, they had another friend named Morgan that kind of got thrown into the mix just a little bit later.
Right.
And she ended up dating Paul.
Right.
So we have Miley, Mallory, Morgan, Paul, Connor, and Anthony.
And then Anthony and Paul have basically been friends their whole life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Anthony has even said that he felt like the Murdaughs were like Alex and Maggie were like a set of parents to him, that, you know, he always felt welcome there, that, you know, Paul was like another brother to him. He was super, super close to
Paul.
It's
like the perfect circle where everybody knows everybody.
Exactly.
And they all just happen to be couples.
Right. And then Anthony and Mallory, you know, we mentioned that they had known each other for at least since they were
preschool. There's a video of them in the pool together, and they're probably like four or five.
Right. And I think Anthony had mentioned something about how he knew for a long time that, you know, Mallory had feelings for him and he had feelings for her, but he wasn't willing to say anything until I think it was pretty recent they actually started dating.
Yeah.
So it was that group of six that were going, what did they call it? An oyster bake?
Well, it was a house party, and they were going to an oyster roast.
So
they all went to the house and they roasted some oysters. And basically sometime later that night, it was pretty late, they all were pretty drunk, right?
Well, before all that, so basically, they had decided, or actually Paul had invited them over to their house. I guess it's a houseboat, right?
I don't know. Well, no, it was a river house.
River house. That's yeah. right. So he wanted them all to come over and hang out, whatever. And in preparation for that, Paul ended up going to a convenience store earlier and used his older brother Buster's ID to get alcohol and whatever to, I guess, to serve to everybody.
Yeah.
Later on, whenever they came over. So there's actual CCTV footage of Paul purchasing the alcohol and then him going to the boat. I guess he was like all excited that he actually was able to purchase the alcohol, mm-hmm. what have you. So so the plan was is that everybody was going to go to their river house and hang out there before the oyster roast. So once everybody got to the house, I think they said it was around 7:30-ish, somewhere around there. They hung out for a while. The assumption is they probably had some to drink. And then I guess on a whim.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, it's not very clear. All I know from the documentary, I mean, I don't want to quote the documentary, but I mean, it's honestly good because it is still the firsthand experience.
Well, I've looked at other sources too. So it pretty much coincides.
Yeah. Morgan basically says that just randomly, like Paul was like, hey, you guys want to just go on the boat? I don't know if they had a plan set in place before they got on the boat or what, but basically he was just like, let's go on the boat. And I don't think I don't think Paul was like completely hammered because they ended up going to a bar. So I don't know where it was, but they went to a bar and they made it there fine. I mean, I think maybe they said that he was a little bit like still not completely right. sober.
Well, I mean, like you said, he made it there.
Right. And then once they got to the bar, it was Connor and Paul that went in. Connor used a fake ID and then, of course, Paul used his brother's.
Am I the only one that thinks it's kind of weird that they were totally cool with going inside of a bar and leaving the girls outside? And
yeah, I mean, they had Anthony, but they just may not have wanted to drink or whatever.
I guess, but it just seems weird. You're all there as a group and then just two guys go in.
It's possible that they didn't have any ID on them.
I'm sure that's what it was. But yeah. So if not everybody can go, then you don't go.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they probably already knew that going into a bar. But anyway, so Paul and Connor went into the bar, and there's CCTV of that as well. They're in there doing shots and stuff. I'm not sure how long they're in there, but enough to get pretty hammered.
Right. I think that's when it was noticeable that Paul had kind of switched into Timmy.
Yeah. Well, because there's also the CCTV of them walking out, though, I think right. is where...
On the dock.
Yeah.
That's when you see them. Yeah. There's CCTV footage of them walking down the dock towards the boat.
Yeah. Because I think they all agree that it's getting late. They want to get back. So they all are heading to the boat. And that's where we can see Paul is doing his gestures with his hands where it's right. not. They're just like very much like sprawled and just out there.
Right. And I think at this point, this is when the other guys and probably the girls are kind of like, somebody else needs to drive.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but that's Timmy's not... here. We need him not to be the one driving.
And anytime that they did, they tell Paul that, and Paul was just extremely aggressive about it. Just like, this is my boat. You know, I'm going to drive my boat, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So anyway, they all get on the boat. And Paul is just completely hammered. And I'd assume Connor is too, but clearly not as much or right. something.
Well, and we also kind of talked about Paul having kind of a like a drinking issue. So right off the bat, he's probably drinking more than any of the other ones anyway.
Yeah. So basically, you know, they all get on the boat. And then the positioning, I just want to make clear. So we have the steering wheel is the center of the boat. And then in front of the steering wheel is a cooler, I believe, that Miley and Morgan are sitting on. And then next to Paul, where the steering wheel is Connor. And then behind them, Anthony's sitting down with Mallory on his lap.
Right.
And
He's holding on to her, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And so basically on the ride back home, it's late.
And Paul's just completely hammered. And I don't really know, because he was angry, I feel like, to begin with.
Well, I think he was just kind of butthurt, mainly because they kept telling him he shouldn't be driving. Right.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that elicited even more erratic driving. He'd walk away from the steering wheel, I think, like to turn and talk to them or yell at him or yell at them or something. I think at a couple of points, Connor ended up having to take over the wheel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was a lot of back and forth going on, and I can't figure out, you know, exactly what it was they were arguing about. I know it had to do with probably him drinking too much and driving.
Yeah. And there's a point, I'm not sure if it's before they leave or not, because obviously Paul wasn't driving.
Right.
But there's a point where he gets physical with Morgan.
Right.
You said he spit and slapped her.
And I believe that's the first time he's ever done it in front of
people. Because Morgan talks about this has been an issue for a bit.
Right.
But nobody seemed to
know about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happened, but nobody really did a whole lot. It was just, you know, it happened. Everybody was a little shocked. And then it was just, all right, it's time to go.
Right.
So I'm assuming it was before they drove.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I'm not sure. Or it was just onward because we need to get home. I don't know.
I mean, maybe they didn't do anything because they were kind of at the mercy of Paul, since he was with the boat.
That's true.
So maybe they just wanted to get to their destination, and then either they were going to handle it there or they were going to wait until he was sober.
Right.
I mean, sometimes there's not a lot you can do when somebody is that drunk.
Yeah.
So obviously it had to be handled, just probably not at that moment.
Right. So. So they're driving, and Paul's driving, is leaving the wheel. Connor's having to grab it. And then you were saying there was a point where he just guns it, right?
Right. So I think at one point, somebody either says, you know, I just need to get home. I want to get home safe. Something along those lines. And for whatever reason, it kind of causes Paul to go even more erratic, and he guns the boat. And when he guns the boat, I'm not sure if he loses control or if he just, you know, like kind of loses the wheel a little bit. But as soon as he guns it, the boat kind of veers off, and it ends up hitting, they called it a dolphin.
It was a dolphin head.
A dolphin head.
It was kind of, it's kind of like a, almost like a pyramid wood structure.
See, I saw the wood structure.
Yeah. That's kind of what it looked, but it was right before a bridge.
Right.
It was like right in front of the bridge.
Right. So when they hit the dolphin head, it kind of shot them into rocks.
Right.
So at that point, obviously everybody has been jarred forward or ejected.
And it ended up being pretty bad. It was, if there's some photos of just like the wreckage and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's not like gore, but it's like there's a good amount of blood on the boat.
Yeah, I remember that.
As far as the injuries, it was Connor that split kind of, he hit his jaw. Didn't he land on his jaw?
Yeah, because when he was jarred forward, he ended up, I believe he ended up hitting like the paneling on.
Right, for the steering wheel.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, not the steering wheel because he wasn't driving.
No, but he got launched that way, didn't he? Right.
He hit paneling of some sort.
Yeah.
But it was to the point where he couldn't even talk. It was so bad. Yeah,
and
it,
he has a huge, and even like in interviews, you can see he has a gnarly scar right next to his mouth.
It's horrible.
Yeah. And then,
Paul ended up hitting his head because the shield where the
steering wheel
is cracked.
Right.
And then,
I'm pretty sure Anthony, Miley and Morgan were all just kind of not launched. I don't know if they were launched onto rocks, but they were all just kind of thrown.
Well, it was, I believe it was Miley that ended up having her finger lodged in between the boat and rocks. And that's how she had her, sorry if this gives anybody the heebie-jeebies, but her, basically the skin on her finger was peeled off.
Yeah, it was
gnarly. Yeah. But Anthony, Mallory, and Miley, I believe, were the three that were actually ejected.
Okay.
Now, Anthony and Miley are for all intents and purposes, okay and present. At the time that they were ejected, Anthony talks about, you know, Mallory being in his arms in one, you know, one moment, and then in the next, you know, blink of an eye, he can't feel her anymore. He's not touching her. And I swear it gives me chills when I say it. I couldn't even imagine. I could not even imagine. And almost immediately, there's actual audio because somebody calls 911.
Right.
And you can hear the screaming for Mallory.
They're all trying to find Mallory because if it wasn't clear, Mallory is not nowhere to be found.
They can't find Mallory. So like I said, Anthony, you know, had her on her lap. And he was holding her 1 minute, the boat hit, and then he realized he wasn't holding on to her anymore.
So everyone's accounted for. It's now it kind of begins the search of where's Mallory.
Where's Mallory? And you can hear, like I said, you know, the screaming in the background for Mallory. And on the 911 call, I believe it's Connor that calls 911 because he says, you know, we've had a boat wreck. There was six of us on the boat, but we can't find one. And, you know, trying to explain where they were and the whole thing. And obviously ambulance, police, all of them, you know, start showing up. Mm-hmm. But what ends up happening is when Paul finds out that Connor calls 911, he's a little bothered. Because that's not how Paul handles things.
Right.
When Paul gets in trouble,
he calls his grandpa.
He calls his grandfather, the former solicitor.
And I mentioned that because earlier I talked about, you know, because it makes you wonder if Paul's calling the grandpa, what trouble has Alex gotten into?
Like when he was a kid?
When he was a kid, yeah. Yeah. He's had to call his grandpa.
Right. So
that it kind of starts, it takes us back before the boat wreck,
right?
Into a separate incident with Paul and Morgan. And I don't remember the specifics, but I know that basically Paul and Morgan were in a truck and it looked like they crashed into a ditch almost.
Gotcha.
And so they crashed into the ditch. It was a pretty nice wreck. And of course, like your immediate reaction should be to call for help.
Right.
Which is what Morgan did. She called 911 and said that they crashed.
That's right. Yeah. Now and I remember.
Paul ended up getting extremely irritated, or like not irritated, but like angry that she did that and hung up. I think he hung up the phone or something like that. It was something like that. And he ended up, he stopped the 911 call and then called his grandfather. And then Alex and Randolph Murdaugh showed up, and it ended up being because he had a lot of alcohol bottles in his car.
Of course.
And so they basically cleared all of that out, covered up the whole thing, and
it just kind of went away.
Yeah. Paul never got into any trouble because right. I believe he was drinking.
I have no doubt.
I'm pretty sure he was drinking. I have a memory because that's when he was Timmy. And I remember he was being aggressive with Morgan.
Gotcha.
So I'm pretty sure he was under the influence.
Right. So much like that incident, when Connor called 911, Paul wasn't all that thrilled. And he's kind of goes off and he ends up calling his grandfather yet again.
Of course.
And you can hear Anthony, which is Mallory's boyfriend, basically, you know, talking to one of the state troopers or whatever they call them over there.
And this is all recorded on the dash cam of Correct. The patrol vehicle.
Correct. So all of this stuff is, you know, you can listen to it, watch it, however, where he's basically saying, you know, do you know who Alex Murdaugh is? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I know that name. And he goes, yeah, well, that's his son, Paul. Good luck.
Yeah.
And that basically saying that, you know,
this is going to go away. Yeah. It's going to go away.
So, and the other thing is you can hear Anthony telling, I'm not sure if that's before this or after this, but at one point he's telling the officers that Paul was drinking.
And he was driving
the boat. and that he killed his girlfriend. All of these three things were said multiple times.
And there's also an exchange between Paul and Anthony.
Right, because Anthony looks at Paul and says something along the lines of, how can you be fucking smiling right now?
Yeah.
My girlfriend is dead or gone.
It was missing. Because they didn't know.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's gone is what he said.
Although he does tell the trooper that Paul killed his girlfriend.
Yeah. I think it was probably just a mix of emotions and not knowing.
Yeah.
Because she was nowhere to be found.
Right. So, well, let's just say Anthony was hot.
Yeah. You can go and listen to it because it's
a good watch.
Yeah.
But you get a real idea of how even his closest friends feel about the whole Murdaugh situation.
Because they know.
They know. And let's be real. I'm sure if they could, they'd use it to their advantage, and they may have in the past.
Right. But they did that because they know that they can get the Murdaughs get away with things.
Exactly. So, what's interesting, though, is that not once did the officers handcuff Paul.
Right.
Question him.
After they were told.
Right. There was no breathalyzer done. There was no, not even like a field test sobriety. Nothing.
But then I also wonder, was that just like negligence? Because at that point, did they even know who he was?
Oh, well, I mean,
like, I know, but like the thing was, is like that, like when Anthony questioned the officer, like, oh, I've heard that name. It like they've heard of them, but did they even realize that was him? So was that negligence or was that?
Well, see, it depends on how you look at it. Now, when you and I were talking about the case before, I had told you that they've talked to prosecutors that have said that when you're talking about a boat in South Carolina, they look at it as the same as being a motor vehicle.
So it was just not handcuff worthy to them because it was a boat.
Or the field sobriety or, you know, any of those things that at that moment, it was just a bunch of kids who were looking for their friend. At that moment in time, their focus was finding Mallory.
Like, I understand that drinking and driving is bad enough, but it's like when a boat is involved, it's not only do you have the vehicle itself, but you're surrounded by water.
Right.
You'd think it'd be like equal, if not worse.
Look, there was a time, I don't know, probably not anymore, but there used to be a time in California that if you were riding a bicycle and drinking, you got a DUI.
I'm pretty sure it's the same.
I don't know. I mean,
that sounds familiar.
I've heard mixed things. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a motor vehicle, a water vehicle, a bicycle vehicle, whatever it is. You know, when you're operating any type of vehicle under the influence,
it becomes dangerous.
It's dangerous and it's against the law. But for whatever reason, in South Carolina, they don't view it that way. I mean, every state has their own laws. And in fact, they didn't even test his blood alcohol level until he was at the hospital.
Which is a whole other thing as well.
Right.
So everybody ends up going to the hospital except for Anthony, who stays there, of course, because his girlfriend's missing.
Right.
He doesn't want to leave the scene. He should be getting medical treatment because, you know, he was, I don't know how badly injured he was, but he was ejected. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that he was okay enough that he didn't need or want medical help.
Right. He just wanted, you know, he was there for a long time while everybody else had gone to the hospital to get some treatment. Somebody or a couple people who also show up at the hospital are,
well, wouldn't you know, it's Alex Murdaughs and his daddy.
Yeah. So they show up, of course. And I believe from the moment they walk in, they're already talking to people because they had to get a statement or they were already beginning like the investigation stuff.
Well, it's funny because, you know, earlier in this episode, I mentioned the badge.
Right.
And what you can clearly see in the CCTV when Alex turns a certain direction is he's got his badge hanging off his pocket. It's not even in his, you know, you don't hang a badge off your pocket unless you're using it for a reason.
Right. And that was another thing, because I remember, because we hear from Mallory's mom as well. There's a moment where she's like, she wanted to go and see the scene, the wreckage.
Right.
And she wasn't allowed to. And she even was like, why are, because I guess Alex and his dad were able to drive straight through onto the crime scene. And there's a point where she's like, why were they able to go and I couldn't?
What's worse is that there was a point when Alex and Maggie went to the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
And I think that was even a bigger heap of salt in the wound, because Maggie is, and I don't mean this as an insult, but she was just the wife.
Yeah.
A volunteer solicitor. She plays no role in being a solicitor, an attorney, or anything.
The only thing I can think of is that it was their boat. So they may have just had the right to begin with, because it was their wreck.
Maybe. I mean, I could see that. However, having the power that the Murdaughs have, tell me that they couldn't have said, please allow Mallory's family.
Oh, yeah, you of know? Course.
And they didn't.
And they didn't, no.
And the Beach family, Mallory Beach is her name, but the Beach parents clearly state that at that moment, I felt it in my gut, a cover-up was happening.
They were ready to cover it up. And that's, as soon as they got to the hospital, that's what, and there was a moment, what did, Maggie. Randolph.
Oh.
No. Randolph was talking to, I think it was Morgan. And because she had asked him about Mallory or something, and he made some sort of like snide comment about it. Do you remember that?
It was Maggie. Well, the only one I remember is Maggie getting into the back seat of the mother's car. And basically, you know, she asked how she was doing and blah, blah, blah. And she made the comment, what if they never find Mallory?
I remember that. But do you remember at the hospital, it was when Morgan
and Randolph comes in? Yes.
There was a point where he comes in.
She's already gone. There's no need to worry about her.
No, it was something else. It was like, oh, be interesting to see how that happens or something like that. It was like something. Do you not remember that?
No, the only one I remember was somebody mentioning something about finding Mallory. And he said something to the effect of, she's already gone. There's no need to worry about her.
No, I think it was like a mix or something of ours. It was just something like, oh, that would be something, something. I don't know. It was like, it was something really snide. And he said it in front of, it was either, I think it was Miley, actually. Yeah. I don't know. It was either Morgan or Miley, because he had come in to say, like, I represent you, blah, 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 blah.
Which is basically what they portrayed that they were there for, is to be their attorneys.
Right.
You know, they walked into each room. They told each, you know, Connor, Miley, who else?
It was Morgan. That I think of it.
Yeah. And they told each one of them not to say anything to the cops. Don't give them a statement. I'm your attorney, yada, right. yada, yada. And when they went into Connor's room, they actually were basically convincing him to take the blame for driving.
It wasn't even that. It was just like they started to pin it. Slowly, it started to go towards Connor, where it was just like, because they even came in and was like asking Connor stuff, and they're like, wait, Connor wasn't driving. Like,
right.
It just slowly started getting
put like they were trying Connor. To shift it that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yeah.
So between whatever comment Randolph made, and then that incident with Maggie, which what's interesting to me is that every person that talks about Maggie talks about how sweet she is, how lovely she is, that just everything is like, I mean, this woman is like sunshine and rainbows right. with sprinkles and the whole thing. But there's something chilling about Mallory's mom when she said that she got into the back seat and, you know, how are you doing, blah, 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 and just made that comment, what if they never find Mallory?
Yeah, that was
like, how do you do that?
That's just, you know. Also, I'd like to talk about the people who were the lead investigators and stuff on the
I was going to bring that up because it changed from the regular officers, right?
Yeah.
To SLED.
And the Murdaughs have connections, right?
The Murdaughs have connections everywhere. I mean,
specifically to them, though.
But they... Well, first it was changed to SLED because it was the Murdaughs.
What is SLED, by the way?
It's South Carolina's Law Enforcement Division.
Oh, okay.
So it's like the upper echelon of cops. They're like the big dogs.
Okay.
They're the ones that, you know, I don't know. I don't want to call them like FBI type, but they're like the state version of it.
Right. And didn't like the lead guy or something like that had a connection to the brother?
So it just so happens that he wasn't the lead on that specific case, I don't think.
I don't know. He was involved somehow. But I don't know what he was.
He was and happened to be the brother of Alex's best friend. And I think what happens is, and see, this is why it gets so murky, because I honestly think that John, which is Alex's brother, I feel like he's really genuine.
Oh, I know. I've seen the stuff and he's like so into it. I'm like, whoa.
Like John, I think they call him John Marvin.
I'm not sure.
Something like that. But anyway, Alex's brother, John Murdaugh, seems to me like out of all of them,
the most emotional.
He is so emotional.
So emotional.
And he is just a genuine, like what he says is truly what he means.
Yeah.
And I think that there were instances that John was involved, and this is later on when we get to Maggie and Paul, where he had called, I think he's like a lead detective or a lead captain of SLED. Mm-hmm. But I think it gets misconstrued as him calling in favors or calling in for something. It just so happens that that's actually his best friend.
Right.
Because John is the only one of the brothers that's not an attorney, mm-hmm. that doesn't know law, that doesn't care to know law, yeah. and isn't involved in the stuff that his, you know, father, grandfather, and brothers are.
Right.
So I really don't think that there's anything there.
Yeah.
But he is best friends with the captain or the lead or whatever of SLED.
Yeah.
But SLED does end up getting involved. And let's just say this right off the bat. I don't know if it's something that SLED does regularly or only when it's the Murdaughs, but they are terrible at investigating what I've seen so far.
Right. And that will probably be discussed later on, right?
Yeah. Because again, I've only seen what they've done with the Murdaughs because that's what we're discussing. But the two major events, like the boat incident, mm-hmm. and then obviously the murders down the line, horrible.
Right.
Horrible.
And also, I mean, as much as they did talk about, you know, this being a cover up and like, what are they going to find her? They ended up finding Mallory.
It was a week later. Yeah. Right. They did end up finding her. Obviously, she wasn't alive, which, again, I'm just going to say this. After several days, like I want to say like 5 days.
They could have. Because they remember the mom Mallory's mom mentioned like her first thought was like, did they ping her Apple Watch? Because she had an Apple Watch.
Right.
So I feel like after a week, they could have.
I feel like they could have too. But SLED was saying like, you know, we're not calling this a recovery. We're still calling this a rescue. I'm like, how?
After a week, yeah.
Like, no. I mean, at some point, I mean.
She's just not going to be chilling in the water for
right,
a week.
This isn't an ocean.
Yeah.
We're talking about a river that has two sides with land.
Yeah.
It's not like she's going to stick herself in the middle of this river and just be like, I'll just chill here until somebody gets me.
Right, yeah.
Like, it literally makes no sense, but this is SLED.
Yeah.
This is why I'm saying, like, SLED makes no sense to me, and they're supposed to be better than the cops?
It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, don't come for me, SLED. That's all I'm saying. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Right. And I think her immediate, you know, cause of death was she had blunt force trauma.
So that was probably she was thrown from the boat, hit her head,
and
slipped
drowned.
Into the water and drowned.
Yeah.
Right. So that is what is believed to be the, kind of the catalyst.
The beginning. The start.
The start of what becomes Alex Murdaugh and I guess his undoing. So eventually Paul is, you know, indicted for a criminal charge, or, you know, they go after him criminally for killing Mallory and drinking underage and all of these things. They go for a hearing, the whole thing, but
it fizzles.
Nothing happens with it, you know. So Mark Tinsley, which is an attorney for the Beach family, he's like, look, doesn't seem to be going anywhere, so let me help you out. Mm-hmm. He kind of makes me giggle. I don't know why. He just makes me laugh. He's just one of those guys that are, you know, they're like stand-up guys, but they will stab you in the back. Like, he would literally take Alex down if he could.
Right.
And he ended up being hired by the Beach family to basically go after Alex Murdaugh civilly, not Paul, because Paul's not where the money's at. So he decided to go after Alex Murdaugh for wrongful death.
Right.
And he also sued the convenience store that sold the alcohol to Paul. Mm-hmm. And I'm missing one. Oh, and Buster.
Right.
That's right.
For the ID.
Buster for the ID. And he essentially just wanted to make it hurt. That's right. Pretty much what he wanted. He wanted to hit Alex Murdaugh where it hurt. And where would it hurt most? His wallet.
Yeah.
He wanted to, you know, just make a statement. And in Mark Tinsley's mind, you know, $10 million seemed fair.
Yeah.
You know, you got money. The Beach family deserves it. It's not going to bring Mallory back, but yeah. You know what?
But there has to be some sort of...
Yeah. Some kind of restitution here. Mm-hmm. You know, your kid messed up. They, you know, he basically killed their daughter.
Right.
And
it all got washed away.
Exactly.
So, give me some $10 million.
So what is Alex's response? Alex's response is, I'm broke.
All right.
And Mark Tinsley is like, you're a liar. Like, there's no possible way. You are literally bringing in millions and millions and millions of dollars to your law firm for cases that you are winning or settling. And, you know, of those millions, you make quite the cut.
Yeah.
You're lying. He's like, nah. I'm not lying. Nah, fam.
Cap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nah. So push comes to shove. Now we're talking, you know, 2 years down the line, there, you know, nothing's happening to Paul. There's no, you know, trial. There's no nothing. And Mark Tinsley is like chomping at Alex's ass for this money.
Mm-hmm.
And so on June 10th, there's supposed to be a hearing because Mark Tinsley has basically filed for, filed paperwork with the court to force Alex to show him the money. show him the non-money.
Right.
Show me that you don't have money because you have houses, you have property, you have cars, you have an airplane.
Yeah.
You have shit.
Yeah.
You know,
it doesn't add up.
Exactly. So show me how you don't have money. And so June 10th would have been a Monday. June 10th, 2021 would have been a Monday. On June 7th, he's actually confronted by someone in the accounting department of his law firm who has been noticing some discrepancies. And the financial stuff gets a little bit too numbery for me.
Yeah.
Math, not my thing.
Agreed.
Yeah. So while I will say that there are a lot of financial issues, and there is so much in that world, that's not my world.
Same.
Okay. So what I will say is this, that there were things happening within the law firm that were catching the attention of Alex's assistant first, who brought it to the accountant and was like, I think there's something going on here, who then started investigating. And it turned out, again, I don't exactly know how this works, but there is a company called Forge. It's kind of a funny name. But anyway.
Forge.
That attorneys use, I guess, to kind of handle their clients' money. And I want to say it's like Forge Inc. or Forge Company or Forge LTD, something along those lines. Somehow, Alex Murdaugh set up a company called Forge without the Inc. company, LTD, yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
It has been dubbed Fake Forge.
What?
I just think it's funny that it's called Forge.
Yeah.
So when he set up Fake Forge, what he ended up doing is when clients were paid their settlement money or whatever, it always goes to the attorney first. The attorney puts it into a separate account that they can't touch. It then gets dispersed to the client, and then the attorney gets their payment. It always goes that way. It has always gone that way. You know, attorneys are required to set up these separate accounts, blah, blah, blah. So he had an account with, I believe it was Bank of America or something along those lines, under Forge, that he was putting the money in. And essentially stealing from his clients.
Of course. So Murdaugh of him.
Murdaugh?
So Murdaugh of him.
So, and it turns out that it wasn't like one client here, one client there.
Was it every single one?
It was many, going back, I think, starting in like 2014.
Oh, wow.
It was a few.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. In fact, in 2018, their housekeeper, nanny, it was kind of all of it. You know, she helped raise Paul and Buster, and she continued on as their housekeeper. She ended up falling at one of their homes in 2018, and she died, I want to say 3 weeks later. She never gained consciousness, and she ended up dying.
Which is its own huge thing. Personally, it turned into a big, like, conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, they thought, because I don't know if we've really talked about it, but Alex Murdaugh has a pill problem, or at least had a pill problem.
No, we haven't yet, because yeah. It really didn't come out real full force until after Maggie and Paul died. But right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, apparently.
But yeah, there was like a whole thing where like they thought Maggie pushed her down the stairs.
Yeah.
Which I think is reaching a little bit, because if you see the steps, it's really only like three. It's like a foot off the ground.
Right.
And if you were trying to kill somebody, I don't think it would be pushing them off of like a foot right. step.
I mean, I think there's an assumption that she may have had like either an aneurysm or a stroke or a something that caused her to fall.
And like the whole like thing with, you know, like the pill problem is they thought, I guess like before that, she had found some stuff and she didn't go directly to, you know, Maggie or anybody, that she would go to Paul.
Right.
So there was like conspiracy that, you know, she knew too much or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
And that they got rid of her.
But let's be real. She had been there for like 20 years. She knew everything.
Yeah, come on. Like, we're going to kill her because, you know, Alex has a pill problem. Like, it just doesn't add up. And I think people are definitely reaching at that point.
I think they are too. I mean, and as a matter of fact, I believe that while her family has agreed to allow her body to be exhumed, they really don't think that she was killed by anybody. They really do believe that it was either an accident or it was she had some sort of event that caused her to fall. Neither here nor there.
Well, because what it was is the dogs tripped her, right? Right.
That's what I... Yeah. So... Yeah. Alex went to the son and basically said, look, you know, it was at my house. I've got insurance. Let me take the blame. Well, just tell him that, you know, the dogs tripped him and she fell and, you know, I'll be able to get that insurance payout for you. You know, and obviously they were appreciative. He didn't have to do that. It was a story that was obviously made up because nobody was around when she fell.
Yeah.
So super cool and nice. Thanks. Yo. And he ended up getting, I want to say it was like 3 million or some really nice number.
Yeah.
And the son never saw it.
None of them did. Cause it wasn't it like the, she had siblings and the son
and a brother and you know, whatever.
They didn't get anything.
They got nothing. They didn't even know about a settlement. They had no idea because why he pocketed it.
Exactly.
So, now what's happening because of this. So June 7th, basically this accountant person approaches him and is like, yo, this is happening. And he's like, huh? Whatever. Okay. And then right in the middle of her talking to him, he gets a phone call that his dad, Buster, is terminal. Like
Randolph, by the way. Not, yeah.
I'm sorry. Randolph. It's, okay. It's Randolph. His dad is like, he's going down.
Yeah.
Like he's dying. You need to get over here kind of thing. And their conversation is cut short. Nothing ends up happening of it because, you know, again, this is a law firm that was started by Randolph's dad. So everybody is close to Randolph. Everybody is, you know, they're like a family.
Yeah.
So that conversation was dropped. And then fast forward that evening, and then we have what Alex is then now on trial for. So stay tuned for part two as we continue on with the legacy or the undoing of the legacy of Alex Murdaugh.
Sounds good.
Bye for now. Thanks for joining us this week.
Come back next Monday for a brand new podcast.
Make sure to check our Instagram at AJFA Podcast and our Facebook group, And Justice for All, The Cat and D Show. Bye.